Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you, folks, there is no easy way out when you're interviewing Al Bernstein, although I never interviewed him before. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, this is the Tornado, Tony Pendick.
And we have a very special guest tonight, Al Bernstein, a consummate boxing analyst and professional, I guess you'd call him. But he's going to be hyping his website, boxingchannel.com. So check that out when you're not listening to our show. We're going to put them on the podcast page as well at fnu.mypodcast.com. And Tony is thrilled tonight, I bet.
I am, Rich. I remember like when I first really, really got into boxing and started understanding it, like I watched a lot of the fights with my dad, you know, when I was young. And, you know, we'd watch on the Saturday afternoon fights and Sunday afternoon, like CBS and all that. The last sort of really following it on a weekly basis was you know, throughout my teenage years, especially. And the two constants that I had were USA's Tuesday Night Fights with Sean O'Grady and Al Alberts, and then Thursday night's ESPN Fights with Al Bernstein and Barry Tompkins. And, you know, you could not get me to do anything on the Tuesday or Thursday night, you know. And, you know, Al Bernstein's been involved in the sport, you know, for a number of years. You know, and what I like about his style of calling a boxing match is he's always smooth. That's the one thing you're really going to notice. If anybody has the pleasure of listening to him, he does, you know, the fight calls on Showtime now. And he's just always smooth. He never really, you know, professional is a word I'd like to use. And the one guy who also happens to be on Showtime who's not a favorite of mine is Jim Gray. And Jim Gray, you know, sometimes we'll try to make himself the focus of the interview and take away from the fighters.
You mean the Tyson?
Putting himself over by, you know, just by just his attitude. You'd never get that with a guy like Al Bernstein. Al Bernstein knows the fight game. And what I'm really excited to talk to him a lot tonight is when Mike Tyson was first coming up, he started his career basically on ESPN. So Al Bernstein had the privilege of calling a lot of Mike Tyson's formative bouts when he was still wearing the white chunks and Customato was still in his corner. So we're getting a guy with a wealth of boxing knowledge. He's seen, you know, seen the best. Because back in the day when they had these fights regularly on ESPN and USA, you saw guys fighting four-rounders. You one day say, man, these guys are going to be good. You saw guys like Bernard Hopkins, Arturo Gatti, Mike Tyson, Oscar De La Hoya. Vinny Pazienza fought some ESPN, but that was early in his career. He was doing some USA, and he was doing some fights on Saturday afternoon. But even guys like Vinny Paz, Mickey Wood had some fights on ESPN. You know, these are guys that turned into big stars. You got to see them when they were still fighting four rounders, and the guys are like, hey, we got a fill-in fight here. You know, the first fight ended on third round knockout, so we got a fill-in fight. Young prospect by the name of Mike Tyson out of the Brownsville section of Brooklyn, New York, and a lot of guys are highly touted on him. You know, being trained by Customato, legendary trainer, and we're gonna see what this kid's all about. You know, 20-something years later, well, we know what he's all about. But how cool would that have been back in the day, you know, calling a Mike Tyson fight when, you know, he's just some prospect that could be hit or miss. And thankfully, he was a hit.
I don't know if we want to talk about Mike Tyson tonight. You know, he's not that big.
I do want to talk about Mike Tyson tonight. I want to talk about everything tonight.
I think we're going to talk a lot about the fight we saw last weekend. But, both of us look like we might be right about it in a couple points. But, actually, there was some news today I read that, I didn't really read it, I read the headline, that Margarito's Corner is now saying that he did want to throw in the towel with Margarito.
They didn't want to throw in the towel?
Or that he did want to throw in the towel, that the trainer wanted.
Oh, the trainer wanted to throw in the towel. Well, I can believe that, you know. And, I mean, Margarito, no matter what you say about the guy, and believe me, I've criticized him a lot over the last 2 years, especially after the scandal came out with his hand wraps. I criticized him a lot, and I think it was well-deserved. But the fact of the matter is the guy had a fighter's heart. He always did, and I'm sure he always will. And he was taking a pretty good shellacking in that fight. I didn't see the fight. I know you did, Rich. But, you know, he was taking a pretty good pummeling. And
I saw the bootleg.
If you even go back and read my article, I did say that, you know, the referee would start to come and, you know, looking at Margarito, especially the damage to his face, starting around the, seventh or eighth round. And from what, you know, that happened a couple times. They came up and they were checking him out, you know, just trying to see if he was still okay and still able to continue. But the guy, he does have a championship-level heart. He's got a great chin, got a championship-level heart. It's hard to understand why he doesn't want to be stopped. And it reminds me, our good friend, the Iceman, did he send you that article about a month or so ago called, like, Please Don't Stop the Fight?
If he did, I didn't read it. I confess.
I'll tell you right now, I still have it saved because I enjoyed it that much. I'll re-forward it to you, and if you can, take 10 minutes or so and read this. Because, you know, John Scully, our good friend, I mean, anybody who's listened to our show for a while has, you know, we've interviewed him a few times on here. And the one thing, you know, Iceman said was,
I think I got us covered now. I just called back in and got on, so I went through the proper protocol, and we should be playing live now. Oh, why's my phone ringing? What's going on?
Oh,
no. Now there's phone ringing going on.
Yeah.
All
right. I think I got it covered now.
Yeah. Hey, it's an echo. We're on time delay.
Oh, cool.
That's the first time I've ever done that. You even got me doing the dialing, so that's good. We're back on live, sort of.
Okay, we're back on live. Well, let me get back to the point that I was talking about, Rich. We were talking about the Margarita fight, and you know, the punishment he was taking against Pacquiao. And as you were saying, you know, he did not want to quit. His trainer wanted to, you know, throw the towel in, which was definitely warranted and definitely understandable. And as I was mentioning, our good friend Iceman John Scully wrote an article, and he actually sent it to me about 2 weeks ago. I really enjoyed it, and I saved it. And if you get a chance, and anybody else get a chance, I recommend this is really good reading, and I'll be happy to send it to you if you don't have it. Just email me. He wrote an article called Please Don't Stop the Fight. And he was talking about, like, during his fighting career, he would always say, you know, if he was in a fight and he was going to lose the fight, obviously he'd say, well, I'm going to lose my decision. But he goes, if he had to be a fight where the fight was stopped, he'd rather be knocked out cold. That way he knew that, you know, there was nothing else he could do. He said, you know, get in a fight, stop. He's like, you know, you just felt inferior that the person beat you to the point where, you know, you couldn't continue. And they had to stop the fight. And he goes, and that just, you know, always, you know, would bother him. So he'd always say to his trainers, you know, go in the ring, like, whatever you do, don't stop the fight. And he said there was a couple of his fights, you know, in his career that, you know, he was either hurting. He said in one fight he was, like, seeing double. I'm trying to remember which one that was. But there were other fights, you know, he was stunned, he was knocked down, whatever. And he was like, he just could not, you know, even, there were fights that he was way behind. And it was like, there were times that he felt, and the fight kept popping into his head, and he mentioned several times in the article, was the fight between Nigel Benn and Jared McClellan back from 1995, where McClellan suffered a serious brain injury, and even though he survived, he now lives with permanent brain damage, like 95% blind, like 90% deaf. Very, very, obviously no cognitive skills, has trouble remembering, you know, things from here and there. And you know, there's so many times, he was, but he would not let that, you know, enter into his brain. And
hey, speaking of no cognitive skill, have you seen the latest on Floyd Mayweather?
I'm afraid to ask, but go ahead.
Oh, he got busted this time for getting involved with a security guard in his ritzy community there where he likes to let people park out on the street. And they've had an ongoing issue with him about this. And so the security guard came up to the house to give some tickets, and Floyd came out, and he poked him in the forehead. So the guy complaining to the L.A. police, I guess, or Las Vegas police. And Floyd was like, just the other day, having to go to a hearing for his ex-wife stuff, you know, his ex-fiance, whatever it was, just threatening his own kids. So whatever happens, if this fight happens, it's going to probably be next summer because Floyd's going to be in court for a while. And it could be his last fight. He might go to jail, you know. It's just like, it's like one of those examples that you make out of somebody. It's like, you know, I never looked into the Mike Tyson allegations enough to say whether he was framed or not or whatever, but you know, this is one of those situations where there's no frame job at all. It's like unequivocal. He screwed up big time. So
right.
There's a lot of drama to be going through with mentally and, you know, physically. You just can't concentrate on training, I don't think, when you're dealing with that crap. So I'd be really surprised if Manny does anything for a while. I mean, Floyd.
Well, I think you're right on that aspect. And I have a few people that I'm arguing with here, and some good friends of mine. And, you know, I have a few people that are, you know, either Pac haters or Floyd lovers. And one guy, and he is a relatively knowledgeable boxing man, but he just cannot stand Manny Pacquiao. Fine. There are guys I couldn't stand, Hector Camacho Sr. being one of them. But, he refuses to give Pacquiao any kind of credit. Like, I did see you when I posted on Facebook a week or so ago my prediction for the fight. He told me I was going to be wrong. Pacquiao's getting knocked out. So I purposely did post on there after the fight was over and said, "Yep, got another one right."
Yeah, I had on my opposing views story, I had a hater that said I was biased.
What, towards Pacquiao?
Yeah.
Why? Because you beat the shit out of the guy?
That I was biased, you know, without going into any detail. So I came back after the fight, and I was like, oh, did you see that one-sided beating?
Yeah, right. And, like, so that was the... funny thing, this guy was like, Pacquiao was going to get knocked out. We didn't. So this guy was trying to claim, like, boy, did you see all the body shots that Margarito was landing? And I think he should have been credited with a knockdown at the one point. Well, I didn't see where, you know, Pacquiao stumbled and landed, like, you know, in a sitting position on the ropes. But it was obviously more off balance. Would that a flash knockdown help Margarito in the scorecards? He would have said maybe he was credited with a knockdown. That's all that would have did on the, you know, on the bottom line of the fight. It wouldn't have taken anything else away. I was reading
my report when I wrote that, you know, if he doesn't end it in the seventh, even though I said on the show that I don't think he'd make it past the seventh, in my report that I wrote like the night before the fight, I said, if he makes it past the seventh, Pacquiao is going to make him pay by punishing his face.
Yeah, and that's what he did.
Yeah.
Rich, if you go back and read the report, I was saying how Pacquiao would be outlanding him 4-1. So I'm reading, I was on a blog. And, you know, people posting, the fight as it was going on. And I remember one guy, like, Margarito lands a right to the head and is countered with an 8-punch combination that 7 of them land flush. Mm-hmm. I was saying 3-4-1. I didn't know he was going to be hitting them 7 or 8-1.
Yeah, see, Manny just used his speed and, you know.
He used his speed, he used the bullet work.
I think, you know, going in against Manny, all you got to do is prepare for fast hands. But it's not just fast hands, this guy.
It's footwork.
He's up and down, changing levels, you know, using every inch of the ring. He only seemed to get caught when Margarito would kind of blow him up against the ropes. And even then, he seemed to be, like, supercharged by getting hit. You know, like, it just made him that one more level of, you know, instinct kicking in and survival. So he would always just turn it right around and reverse roles. It was one of the best performances I've ever seen out of him. And the way he looked at the end of the fight told it all. You know, you got Margarito over there beaten and battered, and Pacquiao looked like he might have had a little bit of a swollen eyebrow. That's about it.
I was talking to a few people the other day, and I was having a conversation with my dad. And my dad's like, you know, what do you think? Is Margarito won any, or Pacquiao, or Mayweather won any of that? I'm like, I don't know, Pop. He's like, I don't think he does. And the one thing I told my dad, and I told other people this, every day that passes, there's like a balance right now, like an hourglass. And the hourglass, when the fight was first being discussed after Pacquiao beat De La Hoya, I'll say that from the first time people really started talking about Pacquiao being a legitimate contender to Mayweather for a fight. That's when, you know, Mayweather was coming out of retirement, of course. And Pacquiao, you know, beat up De La Hoya bad, which Mayweather was unable to do. And people said, okay, this could be a possible fight. And, of course, I started, you know, going through my little brain and saying, how would this fight turn out? And I said, boy, then, Juan Marquez, who's a great boxer, was able to outbox Pacquiao for stretches of both of their fights. And, you know, Floyd's bigger, he's faster, probably hits a little bit harder than Marquez, he's better on defense. I'm like, I can just see Mayweather being too good of a boxer. And at that time, the hourglass was tilted in Mayweather's favor. But every day that passes, that hourglass tilts more to Pacquiao's favor, and there's two reasons why. Number one is when you're a fighter and you get older, as we all do, you know, some of the things you're going to lose first. But take some fighters that, you know, fought into you know, the 40s and beyond. Take a guy like Archie Moore that fought well into his 40s. A guy like Bernard Hopkins who fought well into his 40s. Why did they win their fights? Well, Archie Moore won a lot of his fights, firstly because he knew how to box, nonetheless, one. Secondly, he won a lot of his fights on power. Archie Moore, tremendous puncher. George Foreman was a tremendous puncher. Bernard Hopkins has a lot of skill and trickiness. So that's wins a lot of fights because he's not impressive as he was 10 years ago. These are guys that have been effective fighting at an older age. Guys like Sugar Ray Leonard, Roy Jones Jr., guys with primarily freakish athletes and freakishly fast, maybe not as successful. Ray Leonard started struggling later in his career. He suffered knockdowns against guys that never could touch him early in his career. I mean, Donnie Lon knocked him down, for Christ's sake. And, Hector Camacho stopped him. Come on now. Let's be serious here. Then you got guys like Roy Jones Jr., who was unbelievable during his prime. Roy Jones got knocked out how many consecutive times? You look at it like that. Now, Mayweather, who wins on speed and reflexes, one day they will disappear, and he will not be as fast as he once was, and he'll be easier to hit. Shane Mosley showed that he could be hurt. Just think, okay, right there, that's got to remember, Pacquiao is younger than Mayweather. And other thing, and this is a big one, this is the biggest factor of them all, that why every day the hourglass tilts more and more to Pacquiao.
You with us there, buddy? We lose you? Right. Tony. Somehow we lost him.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, dude, you just like went out into space there for a second, even though you were still...
Yeah, I could hear you. I could hear you. You were saying my name, and I don't know what happened. What was the last thing you heard me say?
I don't know.
Well, listen, now, so I see how I rank. But no, I was talking about how the hourglass takes more and more to Pacquiao every day. One, because, Mayweather wins on speed and reflexes, and they will diminish. Pacquiao has a lot of speed, too, but his thing is more, he has that back end of the power. But the other thing that, gives Pacquiao more an advantage is he's trained by Freddie Roach, who right now is probably the best trainer in boxing. But Freddie Roach took Manny Pacquiao a decade ago, and he took a crude, one-handed fighter who would just come and win on pure just buzzsaw, and he turned him into a pretty good boxer. He taught him how to use angles. He taught him how to use his feet. He taught him how to use his right hand as a jab and a hook. He taught him how to, double up his left hand. He taught him a lot of things. What has Mayweather improved on since early in his career? He does the same things.
Yeah,
Mayweather will never improve because, and I'm going to rip the guy again because I hate him so much, Roger Mayweather and Floyd Sr. are both frauds. They are both horrible, overrated trainers. All they focus on is that pity-pat mitt work that looks impressive and isn't worth a goddamn thing. That's my unequivocal opinion. You watch Mayweather do the mitt step. Tap, 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 slip, tap, 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 tap. That really accomplishes nothing because it's not real. Now, you watch, back to that 24-7, Freddie Roach had the big body protector on in the mitt. What did he have Pacquiao doing? Snapping hard, fast, accurate punches just like he'd be hitting an opponent. And then he'd be finishing it with a good, he'd step over and fire a good straight left to the body. That is another thing that ticks the hourglass more in Pacquiao's favor. He's continuing to improve.
Yeah, that's the level of punching too. It's almost like a movie when you watch the movie because you almost think nobody can throw that fast, that many punches. He landed like 700 power punches. Power.
Yeah. We'll say something ridiculous. 400 punches to the face or something.
Yeah. What the hell? He is just unbelievable. And the funny thing was in the 24/7 episodes leading up to it, Margarito was talking about, oh, I know he's gonna come in with his head down or his hands down, and I'm gonna get him. And where did he get him? He got him maybe once on the forehead and then a couple good shots against the ropes, but. Manny was just able to get out of that. And he can take a punch from just about anybody. But it seemed to me like there was one point in the fight where Manny was just like, all right, I've done enough to this guy. I don't know why he's not going down, but if he wants to finish on his feet, I'm going to let him. wasn't that bad. It was like, you know, he wanted the slaughter rule to be applied. Like, sit this guy down, ref. I think he looked at the ref at one point and was just like, are you serious? Are you letting this continue? Do you see what I see here? Are you watching this guy fall apart? You know, because Margarito, like I said, he doesn't have that type of jab, and he didn't have it in the fight. He didn't have
For a guy that had, you know, 5 inches in height and several inches in reach, he is not a jabber. So he's not going to try to keep Pacquiao on the outside. He's going to try to fight him in close, and he didn't have the hand speed to do that. His goal was, I'm just going to see if I can pressure him, get in his face, and try to use, you know, my superior size to just wear him down. Didn't work. You know, it didn't work at all.
And after I heard a broken orbital bone, had to have surgery on Tuesday, so he got messed up. That's what you get for your $20 in Texas.
Yeah, right.
Boxing license. There you go, buddy. Have fun recovering. he was, you know, cruising for a bruising with his, you know, his attitude and camp and all that. So he got his beaten. I don't know whether he...
I'll tell you what was pretty funny was Freddie Roach. Freddie Roach has a good sense of humor. I like the guy. The one thing, like, they were saying to Freddie Roach, like, Margarito's camp, like, you don't know what we're going to bring. You don't know what we're working on. You don't know this. You don't know that. Freddie Roach is, I've seen you fight. He's like, don't try to bullshit me. He goes, I've seen you fight. And he goes, and there isn't much else you can do. He goes, don't try to, you know, try to, like, think you're going to be doing all this, you know, trickery and all that, because you're not. He goes, I've seen you fight. I know what you bring. Once again, let me reiterate back to another point. Another thing that tilts the hourglass more towards Pacquiao, I don't think Roger Mayweather has ever worked against Pacquiao. I know Floyd Sr., when he worked in Ricky Hatton's corner for that round and a half before Pacquiao knocked him out cold. We see how well that went. And second of all, Freddie Roach has worked against Floyd Mayweather. He worked against him with the De La Hoya fight. And De La Hoya really had a good chance to win that fight, except for the fact that he stopped. Freddie Roach put in a game plan to win that fight, and De La Hoya, and it was working until De La Hoya stopped. So I think Freddie Roach attempted the formula to beat him. Because remember, Freddie Roach was trained, was mentored by Eddie Futch, one of the greatest trainers in the history of boxing. May he rest in peace. And Eddie Futch was the one that devised a lot of the game plans for Joe Frazier and Ken Norton to beat Muhammad Ali. So if he can devise a game plan to beat Muhammad Ali, I'm sure as hell that his protege can devise a game plan to beat Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, that was the funny thing about the 24/7 episodes, too, is that Margarito was more than willing to say, yeah, I'm going to go and hit him in the body. And Freddie gets on camera and he goes, hey, we got our strategy. We know what we're going to do. Nothing further. No elaboration. You got to keep it to the vest, you know, the element of surprise. Best thing ever. Anyway, we're going to get Al Bernstein on the phone right now, and we'll see what he has to say about the issue.
Okay. Al Bernstein. I can't take your call right now.
What's going on, Al?
Even his voicemail sounds cool.
Hey, yo, you got the right guy. That's what it says. You know, a distinctive voice like that. Hey, how you doing?
I gotta get a cool voicemail like that.
Hey there, Al. Where the heck are you? I don't think I got the time confused.
Hello?
Hi, is Al there, please?
Yes. He said, is this the radio?
Yes.
Okay, this is his wife, Connie.
Okay.
He said he will be here in 1 minute.
All right.
Okay.
All right. That sounds good. You want us to call back?
No, he's coming in. He just spilled some Gatorade on all over the floor, and he was cleaning it up.
He's getting amped for the show with some Gatorade?
And that's right. He's trying to get pumped up, you know.
All right.
Oh, a bug. Oh. Here, honey. Okay, nice talking to you.
Thanks.
Okay, bye. Bye.
Hello.
Hey, Al, how's it going?
Good, good, good.
So you been drinking that Four Loko stuff they're trying to ban? Is that what's going on?
Pardon?
Have you been drinking that Four Loko stuff they're trying to ban? What's going on?
Yeah, really.
No, but it's great to have you on the show. And, of course, we've been talking a little bit about the Manny Pacquiao versus Antonio Margarito fight. So,
yes, that's probably on people's minds.
Yeah, tell us what you...
Yeah, a little bit, huh?
Tell us what you thought about that fight.
Well, you know, I think first of all, it was an astonishing performance overall by Manny Pacquiao. And, you know, I thought that it demonstrated that he's probably reinvented himself better than any fighter in the history of boxing because, you know, a few years ago, just revamped his style completely. He was a straight ahead fighter, would throw a jab, straight left hand, take a few punches, and win against Hall of Fame fighters fighting that way. But he had the feeling that if he really wanted to be as great as he could be, he needed to become a better boxer puncher, and he and Freddie Rhodes collectively made him the quintessential boxer puncher.
Yeah, he has some impressive fights. And one thing that I think Tony and I both agreed on going into this fight was that he was a faster guy. And a lot of people think this means hand speed, but he moves his body faster, moves his feet faster. He's just become more of a complete fighter than anybody's ever seen. Like this.
Absolutely. I mean, the lateral movement that he does, never did it before. He just didn't. and now he does. And he's got the volume of punches. He knows how to punch and not get hit, even though clearly he was hit by Margarito in this fight. And, you know, Margarito fought a good fight for him. I mean, in some ways, he hurt him with body shots in round six, hurt Pacquiao, and he was able to land some punches. And obviously we saw the old Margarito that had the iron chin. You know, the Mosley loss, it seems, is a little bit of an aberration in some ways because it's the only fight in which he's actually, you know, gotten hurt to the point where he was really hurt. And in this one, of course, he was stunned on some occasions, but managed to play through it. But Manny Pacquiao does so many things so well. And the volume of punches combined with the fact that he delivers them so quickly makes him very tough.
And accurately.
Yeah, precisely. And that's a rare combination to have all that going for you. And I just remember, I mean, for those of us that think back to those, all the great fights he had in the bantamweight, the super bantamweight division, and below that even, you know, he was really great, but not as good as this, you know. And had he fought this way against all those people in the smaller weight divisions, I tell you, he would have never lost a fight.
Hey, Al, this is Tony, Rich's co-host. It's great to talk to you tonight.
Good to be with you.
The one thing I was saying to Rich before we got you on the air, and I wanted to get your opinion on this regarding the Pacquiao fight. Well, I was talking to Rich, and I wrote a preview, a prediction for the fight, and I predicted a stoppage in the 10th round for Pacquiao using superior speed. The fight pretty much played out like I thought it would, with him, you know, maybe taking one shot and then countering with 4, 5, and 6 and landing about 80% of them. I thought, you know, and I know Lawrence Cole did take a look on a few occasions, but he didn't pull the plug, which was the only thing I really missed on it. The one thing I said to Rich tonight was, you know, I was sitting there, my dad's a big boxing fan. I'm a big boxing fan. And the one thing, you know, we were talking, even some of my coworkers at work, that about 4 years ago, Pacquiao, when he first started, it reminded me of a smaller left-handed version of Dwight Braxton, a short buzzsaw type of a guy. He would just come in and overwhelm you. But like I said, he's improved so much over the last 3 or 4 years especially. I said, every day that fight with Mayweather doesn't happen, I said, there's an hourglass. Right after Pacquiao beat De La Hoya, and he beat him impressively, that's when people started talking about Pacquiao Mayweather. And I said, at that time, I said, I could just see Mayweather winning because if Marquez, who's a great fighter, could outbox Pacquiao for long stretches, why couldn't a superior fighter like Mayweather not be able to do it?
Right.
But then every day, I think the hourglass kind of tilts more towards Pacquiao for two reasons. A lot of great fighters that rely on their speed and reflexes, as does Mayweather, same like Roy Jones, same like guys like Sugar Ray Leonard over the years, they just lose that just a little bit, and it makes them hittable. And I think Shane Mosley showed that that can happen to Floyd Mayweather. And the other thing is, I don't see Mayweather ever really improving. And I've been very critical. Anybody that's listening to me knows this. I'm not a fan of the way Roger Mayweather does a lot of the training. It doesn't like seem like he really forces any improvements. And guys like Floyd Sr. and Roger, they never really impressed me by taking anybody else higher to their game. When they took over Ricky Hatton, I wasn't impressed with the results. They tried to do that little pity-patty on the mitts and timing and reflexes, but I don't see that being realistic. And I see every day that passes, Freddie Roach teaches Manny Pacquiao something new, and that gives him more of an advantage. And I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, I actually agree. I mean, I think that even it's not even about the future now. It's about now because, although I agree with you that for a fighter like Mayweather, as time slips by, it's more of a detriment to him. I thought before this particular fight, I always thought Pacquiao was going to be very tough for Mayweather, but I definitely now feel Pacquiao is going to win. And the reason is simple. I always felt, and I still feel, that sometime in the first 5 or 6 rounds of a Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, Mayweather is going to land a quick right hand, because he will. He just will. but I always thought, you know, that would be our moment of truth because would he hurt Pacquiao with it or would he not? Well, now I'm 100% convinced he won't. Andrade landed some very, very big punches.
Yeah.
And if Mayweather doesn't hurt him with that punch, there's almost, I don't know a way Mayweather can win because Mayweather thirds throws 1/3 of the punches of Manny Pacquiao. And
right. The
sheer volume of Pacquiao's punches and the angles from which he throws them, I don't see how Floyd Mayweather is supposed to win a decision if it's fairly judged from Manny Pacquiao if he doesn't hurt Pacquiao or knock him out.
Yeah, I think that's why they're, you know, the stories that are coming out are showing that it's Mayweather who's really stalling this right now.
I've always felt that. I mean, I have nothing against Floyd. And this is not in any way a bashing kind of a thing. I just think, you know, he doesn't want to fight Pacquiao. The last negotiations, which they claim didn't even happen, you know, Pacquiao agreed to the blood testing and whatever, and the money was never an issue. So to my way of thinking, it's always been Floyd that's been the one that, you know, for whatever reasons, has put this fight on hold a bit. And as time goes on, it's harder and harder for him to make his case. And now, of course, he has these legal issues hanging over his head.
Yeah.
And that's a further impediment.
I just told Tony about the security guard issue that he just had that was in the news. I don't know.
That's more of a distraction, I think, even though, you know, although it could add to his woes, but, primarily, these are serious charges here in Las Vegas. Law enforcement people and others don't think this is something that will easily go away. And remember, you know, he has a legal history,
right.
Convicted before or pleading guilty before to a situation like this. So, you know, it's not as if this is a fresh situation.
And
yeah, nice.
It also popped in my head a little bit, thinking about comparing Pacquiao to Mayweather. I was telling Rich, I have a friend of mine in the Philadelphia boxing community, and you know, he's a former amateur fighter. He does a lot of writing. He is not a Pacquiao fan. Cannot stand him. He actually commented on my preview and said Margarita's going to knock him out. So I just sent him an email after the fight. I said, yeah, I think I was right again. Well, he was, he was obviously praising Floyd. He loves Floyd. And he was, and Al, please don't fall over laughing here because I almost did. He was saying that, he goes, I don't think Pacquiao would even have a chance against Zab Judah. I think Pacquiao would annihilate Zab because Zab does not have the chin to stand up to him. And I've seen Zab, when the game gets tough, not get going.
I know fighter A, B, and C doesn't work, but Joshua Clotty beat Zab Judah, and Danny Pacquiao won every second of every round against Joshua Clotty. So not that styles can make a difference, but there's nothing about Judah's style that really makes him unbeatable to Pacquiao. So
not at all.
Yeah, I don't find that a credible comment because it's just, I can't imagine. I mean, that's not to say Zab Judah wouldn't be an interesting opponent for Pacquiao and at some point in life wouldn't make an interesting fight. Judah's actually capable of doing that against almost anybody, but again, he's not the most consistent fighter in the world.
Right, and a lot of times it depends if he wants to. I mean, I've seen him get beaten by a guy that was a very tough fighter, but also a very limited fighter in Carlos Baldemir. Not the fastest guy, just a very strong,
physical
guy.
Zab Judah's not a consistent fighter, and that's the one thing about Manny Pacquiao. He is, and the other thing about Manny Pacquiao, if we go through this long run he's had since he moved up in weight, but in the Cotto fight and the Margarito fight were the only fights where he was even tested by punches landing, pretty extraordinary. And let me say something else. This version of Manny Pacquiao, if he fought one, I love Juan Manuel Marquez. I think he's a tremendous fighter. And I believe it's a shame that in his early part of his career, he didn't get as many big fights as he deserved. Mismanaged, I thought, by Nacho Beristain. Because he would have performed even better overall. So I love Marquez. And I would make a case that Marquez certainly won one of those two fights at the very least against Pacquiao. However, having said that, this version of Manny Pacquiao much more easily beats Marquez.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Much more easily beats Marquez this time. I think the first two fights, pick'em fights, but I don't think that now Pacquiao, especially if they fought at a slightly higher weight, I don't see him losing to Marquez.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny that they still consider Floyd the pound-for-pound best one. The reality is it's Manny Pacquiao that's been going through so many different weight classes, and that's like the true definition of pound-for-pound.
It's just hard to discount what Pacquiao's done. I mean, I don't know. I know, and I understand there's always another side to this, and you don't want to be too effusive in your praise, and you always want to temper it and look at things realistically and objectively. And having said all this, Floyd Mayweather is a remarkable fighter. He's astonishingly skilled. But as I was watching that fight, I was watching the Margarito fight, and, it was thrilling to watch. And it was a one-sided fight, but it was the most exciting one-sided fight you'll ever see, partially because Margarito did get some things done. And it was just amazing watching Pacquiao fight. And here's the big difference. At the end of the day, the difference between Pacquiao and Mayweather is Pacquiao is just much more fun to watch. He just is.
Oh, yeah.
He's taking nothing away from Mayweather's skill. Manny Pacquiao is just more fun to watch.
Yeah, I would say that Floyd's last fight was an exception, but most of his fights, I would say, yeah, I'd agree completely. But his last fight did seem to actually move forward more against Mosley.
He did, but, you can't say that was if you take that fight and juxtapose it to this Pacquiao Margarito, I think this one was certainly more interesting.
Right, yeah.
But it's interesting,
it would be more of a competitive fight if the Floyd Mayweather that showed up that wasn't backing up for once you know.
Right.
And
yeah, and listen, has he ever lost? No, he's never lost. Although you can make the case he lost to Castillo in one of those, the first fight. But beyond that, he's never lost. He's never been in serious danger. So that's, you know, but then again, he has not fought the quality of competition that Manny Pacquiao has.
And the other thing I think of what said, I am a big fan of Freddie Roach. I mean, anybody that was mentored by Eddie Fuchs obviously has high marks in my book. Because, I mean, I remember when I was first getting into boxing, Al, and I was telling Rich earlier, my Tuesdays and my Thursdays were always booked when I was a teenager. That was the days of the Tuesday night fights and then watching you, of course, on the Thursday night ESPN. So my Tuesdays and Thursdays were always booked. And I remember watching guys like Marlon Starling coming up and, you know, Freddie Roach was at the tail end of his career with guys like Riddick, Big Daddy Bell, and Eddie Fuchs was just always such a quiet, calm presence in the corner. You know, he never really raised his voice, but he spoke with such authority. And that's why I think that Freddie Roach is probably one of, if not the best trainer in boxing today. Now, Freddie Roach, when he worked with Oscar De La Hoya for that one fight against Mayweather, he came up with a pretty sound game plan. Because De La Hoya, after eight rounds, that fight in my book was dead even. And I looked at Mayweather's eyes when he was in the corner, and he looked a little scared, a little confused. And if De La Hoya would have kept that pressure up and kept that jab going, especially to the torso and the shoulder, I think, honestly, he would have had a chance of stopping Mayweather in about the 11th or 12th round.
Well,
but unfortunately,
stop. Right, and Oscar, who has often not been the best tactical fighter on the planet, started to smother himself. Instead of using the jab and keeping a distance, he started smothering his punches, and that was, you know, a big problem. So, yeah, no, it's, you know, and Oscar's never been, has never been great at, first of all, Oscar's a chameleon. He changes not just fight to fight, but round to round. And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's one of his great, I don't know that he found that identity as a fighter. And in all the years, as iconic as his career is, and he certainly has had some wonderful performances, I don't know if he ever found his identity as a fighter. And some of the constant trainer changes, some of it may have just come from him not being, not having his focus on who he was as a boxer.
Now, Al, one thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, looking at the picture of the news lately, a lot of people are saying boxing is dying. You know, they're comparing it to MMA and trying to say that MMA is better, at least in America. You got no American heavyweight champion. People are saying that if they don't make this Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, the sport is dead. How do you come back to that? How do you?
No, it's easy. It's a no-brainer because, first of all, there's a couple things. First, boxing in the 1990s was in the abyss. The matches that needed to be made weren't made. The big names in the sport, the Tysons, the Joneses, others, were more often in mismatches than they should have been. And only Oscar De La Hoya, in my opinion, kept the sport transcending its fan base at that time. However, and the mainstream media, kind of stopped covering boxing around 2000, 2001 because of a lot of that. Boxing since 2002 or 3 has consistently raised its level. This year might have been an aberration. This year, while it was a good year, and it's closing well, but for the first time in about 5 or 6 years, boxing didn't really make all the matches it was supposed to make. But the product boxing has put out there in the last 7 years, I would argue, has been as good as anything that we've seen in the last 4 decades. I mean, that's this amazing amount of great fights. And the only thing that has prevented boxing, though it's gotten back up to its place among niche sports, and in America, everything's a niche sport except the NFL. It's just how big your niche is. It has boosted itself to a point. The only thing keeping it from doing more is that it doesn't get covered. You know, mainstream media doesn't give it. I'm not saying they should cover it like they do the NFL or NBA. They don't give it its due. So that's one thing. MMA is not a threat to kill boxing. The two can coexist just fine. I've announced some MMA matches, hosted them. I'm not certainly not well-versed enough to be an analyst on those, but I've filled in on Showtime on a couple of occasions and done a few other ones because I find it an interesting sport. I really do. But the fan base is slightly different, and there's a big mutual fan base. So, you know, boxing doesn't die because boxing just won't die. You know, it won't. It's not going to. It's going to always have its niche, and it'll be here.
Well, I'm not one of those subscribers to that train of thought, but...
Right, but as I face it on every general radio talk show I do, somebody will come up with a statement like that, and they'll always make the MMA comparison, and I just don't, I don't see it as a...
Well,
it's not an either-or situation.
A little bit of an application in America, but if you go worldwide, like I always say, you know, it's countries like Mexico where...
Oh, my God, or England. Wow. I mean, boxing is, you know...
Germany.
Germany's a better example even yet, yeah. And we've seen it with the Super Six tournament we've done on Showtime. You know, we go over to the Frotch fights and the Abraham fights in, you know, in Europe, and, you know, Kessler, you know, would have filled up the stadium in Denmark had he fought Alan Green. You know, it's just, so it, you're right. I mean, it's different internationally.
And the one thing that I'm back to, too, with the whole argument of, you know, whether the sport is dying or not, I look at some of the other fighters that people haven't really made a big deal about yet. You know, of course, you hear about the Pacquiao's and the Mayweather's, but one person I remember said the thing that I think it was a woman in New York that we talked to actually a few months ago, but she said that the problem that's wrong with boxing is we don't have any way of knowing who these boxers are. There's no
contender. Because the sport isn't covered by mainstream media. Now, you know, it isn't. They just won't do it. I mean, I spent years at ESPN trying to get SportsCenter to, you know, I mean, in the last 3 years I was at ESPN, when I wasn't doing the boxing series, I was doing stuff for Classic, but I was covering regular, you know, other sports. And they'd send me out on the weekends to do... I covered a lot of Major League Baseball, and I'd cover games that were tangentially part of the pennant race, but weren't monstrous. And they'd fly me out. We'd spend a lot of money. I'd do a million hits on, you know, on SportsCenter and all the other, and ESPN News and everywhere else. And I'd think to myself, but I couldn't get them to let me cover a fight in my own city where it would cost them nothing. To cover Shane Mosley fighting in a semi-major fight. And I said, it's madness, you know. I'm not saying you blow out the budget for it, but all you have to do is hire a... with the boxingchannel.com that I'm executive producer now, I know exactly what it costs to do it, you know. I know what it takes to do it and cover it halfway decent at least, and they could have done the same thing, but they didn't want to.
Do you find the internet's a double-edged sword, though, in your business, where, you know, people are getting these cable feeds for free, and, you know, it's a great place to
share
your word, but have that.
I don't know. You know, I think pay-per-views, they can certainly get around. I mean, I don't think it bothers the pay networks like Showtime and HBO. You know, I'm sure there are ways to tap in and get things, but I don't think they see it as a... I mean, obviously, at some point in life, and that's part of the reason why I'm happy to be involved with the Boxing Channel, of course, boxing is a sport where people get a lot of their information and some of their content on the Internet on boxing. But, you know, and this weekend we're going to have a free live boxing match on the boxingchannel.com. So we hope that a lot of people tune into it. But you know, it's not... The Internet is not, at this point, something that replaces... And everybody believes in the future will be that way, and it may well be, that you'll get most of your content from the Internet because it'll be plugged into your big-screen TV and you'll just choose from amongst 3,000 things that you want. That may happen. Not in the very foreseeable future, but maybe 15, 20 years down the road. Maybe 10, I don't know.
I hear we're going to have screens in our brains. That's the ultimate.
Yeah, you know. Well, yeah, and, you know, and so... It's, you know, but I don't think it's, I think boxing, thank goodness, has the Internet, because without the Internet, boxing would not be able to get its message out. But the good thing about the Internet and about, you know, excellent sites, that, you know, what you guys are involved with and all of them, is that they give boxing a chance to have its message get out to people, or its information get out to people, and you can have these internet sites dedicated to it.
Well, I think the best part is the comments, you know, and it's kind of my experience that says that too, because the comments are actually what drives the site, if you think about it. It's all about incoming and outgoing links, the popularity of a site, and, you know, also word of mouth, of course, but nine
sure.
times out of ten, it's all an algorithm that's designed to calculate the ratio of incoming and outgoing links. So whenever anyone comments and leaves a link to their website through their, you know, when you click on their name, it's like, you know, they're participating, they're responding to your story, and they're helping your website out every time somebody comments. So you get a little
it's true.
People talk, and everybody feels part of the whole story. And
yeah, and that's a community, a communal kind of a thing that television can't exactly give you. And they're different mediums, you know. They operate differently. I've been very fortunate. In my career, it's been 30 years now. This is my 30th year. I've been very, very fortunate to be in television, radio, the written word, and also now internet, over the last few years, the internet in many different ways. And it is interesting because they're all different, and I've even done live performing, so where the audience reaction is immediate. And so what fascinates me about the age we live in now is that every one of those things I mentioned impacts people slightly differently. And I think it's intriguing. And boxing is a perfect example of how all those mediums are necessary on some level. Some are less available to it than others. But, and they all act differently. Because like you point out, the internet is a more communal kind of a thing.
Well, I'll tell you, my involvement with this, I've been involved in this for, growing up, I watched all the fights of my dad, back in, the late 70s when I was just a little baby, Nappy Saab Muhammad, and, a lot of the guys like Jelton Joe Chandler, Sugar Ray Leonard, of course, Tommy Hearns, Roberto Duran. Then throughout the 80s, especially late in the 80s, I really started getting involved in boxing. And when I was a teenager, in my late teens, I started training to fight myself, which was pretty great. I used to love watching all the fights. Well, obviously, back then, there was no internet, so all you were getting is that you had to find newspapers, Ring Magazine, or, whatever you could find on TV. A couple of years ago, I started getting more and more versed in the internet. I mean, because like I said, I'm a boxing nut. I mean, if there's news about boxing, I want to read it. I want to hear it. I want to know it. I want to watch it. And a couple of years ago, there was a fight on TV, and I just happened to be online because when it comes to ESPN anymore, the only thing you're going to see on ESPN regarding boxing is something like the time they had that fight up in New York where I think it was James Butler sucker punched the fighter after the fight was over and knocked him out unconscious and got arrested right on the spot. But a couple of years ago, I'm online and I happened to stumble into a boxing chat room. I became friends with Iceman John Scully. We were talking about fight, and of course I remembered his fighting career, watching him on USA and some of his different fights and fighting for a world title. Well, John got my email address and we stayed in contact. And just by chance, he sent me an article that was written about him by Rich. And when I saw Rich Bergeron as the author, I stopped for a minute and I said, John, how do you know this guy? And he goes, well, I don't really know him very well. He's writing an article about me. I said, well, I was supposed to fight a guy in the amateurs back in the National Collegiate Tournament back in 1998 by the name of Rich Bergeron. We almost met in the finals, but we both got eliminated, and I just happened to remember the name. He was from VMI. John's like, I have no idea, but I'll email him. Well, about a half hour later, I get an email from Rich. They're like, you were going to fight me? I said, yeah. You lost to a guy named Michael Jordan? He goes, yeah, I did. I said, right. I said, and I lost to the guy that was 6'7". And the next thing you know, you got a journalism background? I said, yeah, I do. And I said, I've been, following fights and writing about it and, watching them for 30 years now. Now I'm co-hosting a weekly talk show about it. And I love it because it gives me a chance to talk to guys all throughout the sport. I mean, talk to guys that are coming up and they're amateur fighters and they've never had, you know, a professional fight and they're excited and they're hungry. Or you get a chance to talk to guys who was my idol growing up, Vinny Pazienza. I was able to get him on the show one night, and that was like a godsend to me. Tonight was also very exciting for me to get to talk to you, because I remember all the fights, all the nights watching you Thursday nights, you and Barry Tompkins on ESPN, now watching you on Showtime. Things, you know, a lot of things I like to, you know, pick people's brains about just because I love the sport so much.
Well, that's something that's interesting, you know, the way you put that. And boxing is a little more like that. It is funny, and I mentioned that I've covered a lot of other sports, and boxing is a little different because it actually breeds more of that, I think, than a lot of other sports, where you'll end up, you know, at whatever level, you know, the coverage is that you're on at any given time, even, you know, some guy that writes for the Des Moines Register, you know, back in the 80s, would somehow find a way, that guy would be sitting there chatting with, you know, with Angelo Dundee or maybe even Ray Leonard or the Petronellis or Marvin Hagler or something. And, you know, I don't think in any other sport that would have happened. So I think it lends itself to that.
It took me a while to realize how easy it is, you know, once you make a few contacts to get guests, regular guests and people to interview. I actually started on a MySpace page, and my blog got so popular I had like 10,000 friends on this MySpace page.
Wow.
And that blog still exists. So there's a lot of awesome interviews with female and male fighters of all kinds and people just from every avenue, cut men, and that's what you get. You know, you just put together your own mix and you do it yourself, and your passion gets to carry through on it. You know, it's made so many people, not so much rich like they were expecting in the dot-com boom, but it gives you that power to do your own thing. You know, you don't have to listen to anybody.
And a lot of it, at least for me, has to do with, like, boxing is a total, and I'm sure MMA, hard for me to say because I've never really been involved in the sport, but from a guy that's, I mean, training in the gym in, you know, South Philadelphia with some guys that, you know, have gone on to world title fights, and training with guys that are down at my gym now. I'm not there, you know. I got to stop down and see everybody. You know, I train kind of on my own now. You know, just working out to stay in shape. But guys like, you know, Johnny Dance Machine Carter's there. You know, Nate Miller, right after he won the World Cruiserweight title back in 95, he came to my gym because he knew some of the guys there, just to, you know, bring his title belt and meet some of the younger fighters and give words of encouragement. You know, meeting guys like the Frasers out of Philadelphia, of course, Smoking Joe and his son Marvis. You know, you get to meet these guys, and you find it's like, oh, you box too? Well, where'd you fight out of? And it's different than playing football. It's like, oh, you play high school football? Or you play college football? Yeah, okay. Did you make it to the NFL? No. But even if you didn't make it to a pro fighter, you didn't win a world title, it's, yeah, where'd you fight out of? Oh, man, who was your trainer? All right, oh, you fought around 1998 in the college circuit? Oh, do you know so-and-so? Do you know so-and-so? And then I go to a lot of fight cards in Philadelphia. Of course, you know, the Blue Horizon right now, it's not open, not conducting any cards at. Hopefully that'll change soon. But there's another place in there called the New Alhambra or the Arena now. And they have a lot of fight cards. It's all floor seating. It's a nice little, quaint little gym. And Russell Peltz put some shows on there. And I remember I was sitting next to a couple. They were coming to their first fight. They were, I guess, maybe their 50s or so. They were at their very first fight, and they were excited. And I'm sitting there talking to them, and, yeah, we're at our first fight, and, you know, we were really excited about it. And then there were a father and his son's best friend sitting in front of me. And the kids, they're at their first fight, and they're trembling. They're so excited. And I said, well, what can I do tonight to help, you know, increase their enjoyment of this card? And the one guy fighting on the card was a very, very good friend of mine, a former sparring partner, a guy that, you know, I still talk to on a regular basis. And he was getting out of the ring after his fight, and I kind of motioned to him. I said, when you get a minute, come back. And he went to the dressing room, he took a shower, and he came back. And he signed an autograph for these two kids, and then he also met and he shook the hands of this couple that was sitting next to me at the very first fight card. And they were so excited because they didn't feel like they were at a place as a spectator. They felt like they were part of the show. And that's why I enjoy going to a lot of these smaller shows, especially in Philadelphia. It's like tears. Everybody knows your name.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think that's true. You know, the boxing cards and whatever, they breed a certain kind of communal kind of feeling. And that, you know, as you pointed out.
Now, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a show called White Collar Brawler now on the web, on the World Wide Web, and it's these two.
I have not, no.
These two kids in Silicon Valley out there, San Francisco, actually, they decided to quit their computer jobs as computer geeks and fight each other. And they got this trainer and everything, and they have public workouts on the beach, and they've done it so well. And it's really worth taking a look at. Maybe it's something that you can get these guys on the boxingchannel.com and do an interview with them.
Yeah, that would be fun. I'd love to do that.
But it's something that I think that boxing needs more of. Like Tony says, you know, you got to feel part of the show. You got to know who these guys are. And I really think you need more reality shows like The Ultimate Fighter. And those guys, I mean, they've made millions off the UFC, but they're always willing to come back and say, yeah, The Ultimate Fighter put us on the map.
Yeah, I think what we really need more of in boxing is, back when I first really got into the game, as I was saying, back in the late 80s, early 90s, you could follow a young fighter throughout his career. Now, the Olympics right now, the way they have the scoring system, the people can't get into it. I mean, that's why the boxing matches are covered at like 2 in the morning. You know, nobody's going to be there to watch them because it's all, you know, we're gone are the days of the Sugar Ray Leonards and the Muhammad Ali's, even the Oscar De La Hoyas and David Reed's. You know, there isn't really any excitement. I remember every year, every 4 years, going into the Olympics, they would come out with a ring magazine, would have a profile on all the guys representing the United States, say who was, you know, their main competition, and then what are their chances of bringing home the gold. I mean, and you had guys you could follow, Riddick Bowe, Ray Mercer, Floyd Mayweather, Antonio Tarver, Fernando Vargas, big guys from '84, Breland, Magic Taylor, Holyfield. And you got excited about these guys before they ever stepped in the professional ring. And then you had, like I said, the two shows that I always mentioned, USA on Tuesday, ESPN on Thursday. And you got to see these guys young. Mike Tyson, you saw him in his first few fights on ESPN when he's still wearing white trunks. They still show him to these days on ESPN Classic. And
you got excited about these guys.
We
really got buying people on them. Yeah. What it was like as an analyst in the Tyson era. You got to tell us a little bit about that. I mean, that was pretty much the last big heyday of boxing that I remember. I grew up with that. So, but I was
during that period, and it's interesting, it was the best and worst of times in a way, because as I pointed out, in the 90s was the beginning of what was some trouble for boxing. And I think Mike Tyson was the poster child for that, because while he was certainly popular and was the face of the sport, the fact of the matter is that was the problem. He was the face of the sport. And, you know, I don't know that, well, let's say this, he was the face of the sport, and then Oscar De La Hoya became the face of the sport, and obviously there was a difference. But, you know, it was interesting watching him go through all that, and then post Douglas, it was an all another, kind of a different situation. Watching the Tyson that came out of jail and tried to reclaim his spot as the top heavyweight. And part of the reason that was, you know, the heavyweight division obviously now is not as meaningful in boxing. It hasn't been since Lennox Lewis left, and even Lennox Lewis had a hard time, you know, garnering the attention and acclaim of a lot of fans, especially here in America. But it was an interesting time, but more interesting in the time that was probably the best as far as excitement in boxing was in the 80s for the Hagler versus Leonard Duran era. That was an amazing time, the likes of which you don't get to see very often.
Well, who nowadays would you say is the guy or the group of guys that are going to change the sport? They're going to turn a lot of heads.
I think it's going to be groups of fighters. You know, I think it's going to be, and it's going to be up to the fighters and up to boxing to make the fights. And, well, as I said, for the most part, they've been doing it, but we've seen a little bit of a diminution of that. What's made boxing kind of special to me in the last 6 or 7 years is we've seen people that we want to see in the ring against each other. And it's hard to have a breakout star. There has been one in Pacquiao and Mayweather to an extent also. But that's happened almost by accident because those two men, you know, they've just transcended the idea that their boxing is recovered as well as it should be. So it's going to be hard for some of the fighters now to break out to the casual sports fan. But what is making inroads is the fact that good fights are being made and exciting fights. And I think what's going to happen for boxing is, perfect example is, you know, the 140-pound division where there's a number of good fighters like Bradley and Khan and Alexander and other fighters. They need to fight each other. And obviously we're seeing Bradley and Alexander do it. And the same is true. We have the bantamweight tournament, which, you know, we have Yannick Perez and Victor Cheney, Abner Morris, and Joseph Igbeko. You can put them in any combination and they make a great fight, and they're willing to fight each other. Super Six, the same kind of a thing. So it's going to have to be, making exciting and good fights, because I don't think the media is geared now to allow a single, and I'm not even sure it's perfect for the sport, for one or two personalities to drive the sport.
Anyway,
I don't think it's perfect, because if those personalities, if they don't bring what needs to be brought, which I think with Pacquiao and Mayweather is what we need to bring to the table, is those two to get in the ring and put on a great fight. I mean, I think it really hurts even more if they get in the ring and the fight turns out to be, very much a letdown.
And that's what hurt boxing a little the last few years as well. When the crossover fans came to see a lot of Mayweather fights, for instance, you know, whether it was Mayweather De La Hoya or whatever. I mean, honestly, those fights weren't wildly compelling. He is not the kind of person that makes wild. So in a year when we might have had 12 wildly exciting, thrilling boxing matches that only a certain audience is going to see, the casual fans come and see that. And more importantly, and this is, the Golden Boy was very guilty of it, but Top Rank has been guilty of it from time to time as well. When you have those worldwide audiences, the most important thing you could do, and this is a lesson to be learned from MMA, is put on an undercard that's terrific. And it's the one time you should be able to. It's the one time you should be able to do it, because money is no object. You know you're going to make a lot of money, and boxing promoters have not done that as well as they should, and that's been a hindrance. So, guys, I'm going to have to jump off here. I'm delayed for another. I've got to get to someplace, and I apologize, but I'm going to have to jump off here in a minute or two.
All right.
I know Rich forwarded me your email. When we're getting you on the show, with your permission, I'd like to send you one of the articles I wrote a year and a half ago after the passing of Arturo Gatti, your tribute article.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I got to see him in quite live, and it was a turning point for me. And I really enjoyed it, and I hope you'll enjoy the article.
Oh, I'm sure I will. That's great. I'd love to see that. No, I'd love to see that.
And Al, I got one question I usually ask every guest I haven't asked yet of you. But what do you love most about boxing?
I enjoy the part of what I like about it. I like the boxers for one thing. I think they're. I've interviewed a zillion boxers over the years, and my statement is always the same. For the most part, 90% of them are people I would want as my neighbor. And it's a very tough way to make a living, and I admire what they do. I can just go back, and it sounds like we all box as amateurs. I go back to amateur boxing and just remember, just from that experience, how difficult the sport can be, but it has its rewards, obviously. And so I admire the boxers. And the other part of it is, to me, it's the ultimate one-on-one sport where you get to see different how people instantaneously have to react to things, and I just think it's exciting. And the thing I like the best about it is when there's great give and take and there's exciting matches. I'm not a one-punch knockout guy. I like the interesting matches, and I like when there, it can be a knockout, certainly. But so those are probably the things that make stand out. And the other thing is, boxing is filled with interesting personalities, and been privileged to know a lot of them over the years, and they make it very interesting.
Well, you've been privileged to be one of them too, right?
I guess, yeah, I suppose, yeah. I'd like to think and I hope that over the last 30 years in chronicling the sport, I've enhanced it and made it enjoyable for people. And, my goal always is to enhance what's in front of me. I'm just there to add information, anecdotes, insights, hopefully, that make it more interesting, you know. And my credo is not to try and overpower the event. I'm as a consumer, I don't like when sportscasters do that, and I don't want to do it myself.
All right. Well, it's been great chatting with you. You did a great job tonight, and as always, we'll definitely keep an eye out for you and keep listening and watching.
Well, I appreciate it very much, and thank you very much for having me on, and I hope that I want to mention to folks that if they can go to boxingchannel.com, they're going to see a lot of great coverage, and they'll also see a boxing match this Saturday night with Logan McGuinness fighting against Adrian Verdugo from Canada, and it's all free, so they can just go there and take a look at it, and I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah,
sounds great, man. Thanks for being on. We enjoyed the interview.
Take care. You guys take care.
Bye-bye. Don't forget to check out that white collar brawler, too. That's Al Bernstein for you. Great interview, and he was very patient with us.
One of the most knowledgeable guys about the sport of boxing.
Yeah.
Like I said, I watched Al for a number of years on ESPN. I watched him a lot on Showtime. And it was just funny when I got your email today, saying that we got an interview with Al Bernstein, because the other week my father and I were talking about it, watching him on ESPN. And I said, I always liked Al because he was just a consummate professional. He was a good boxing announcer. You know, he never got overly crazy out there. But there were a lot of fighters that you knew when he was into a fight. And it's something that I personally enjoyed. And he made you really get involved in the action yourself. And he still does on Showtime. You know, we've got a big fight coming up pretty soon between Arthur Abraham and Carl Froch, which I think is going to be an excellent fight because there's a little bit of bad blood between them. And what you got here is you got two power punchers that don't really spend a lot of time on defense. Froch is a little bit more of a mechanical guy, big, strong, tall. Abraham, a little bit shorter. He's more of a hunting type of a fighter. He cleaned Edison Miranda's clock pretty good, and he's cleaned a couple other guys' clock. And they both have late round wins over Jermaine Taylor. I think Abraham is a little bit more impressive. I mean, Froch had to come off the floor in that fight, and if Taylor would have turned on the gas, he could have stopped Froch, but I don't think that was his personality. He didn't do it. And Froch stopped him with seconds ago. Abraham really took control of the fight and knocked Taylor out cold.
Selected to receive a $1,000 Walmart gift card.
You get your Christmas shopping done. Ready. Look at that. You can do it online. A Walmart gift card.
that would be a good fight. But like I said, I've always been a fan of Al Bernstein. He's a guy, he knows the sport of boxing. He's a guy he's enjoyable to listen to. I said, part of my formula of years in the sport of boxing, Tuesday nights, Al Albert and Sean O'Grady, the champ. And then Thursday nights, Al Bernstein and Barry Tonkin. And they just made, lots of fun. I could, get excited for a fight between, this guy is, 6'1" and 320 pounds with an 0-4 record against a guy that was 6'6", 220 pounds, ripped to the bone, 22-0 with 21 knockouts. And they had me excited about it.
Anyway, were you aware that Carlos Manuel Baldomir is in action this week? Or tomorrow, actually. Tomorrow in Argentina.
Carlos Baldomir is?
Yeah, you want to go cover that fight?
No, can I?
Get you a press box. It's on HBO,
I'm actually surprised he's coming back that fast. Because just in his last fight, which wasn't long ago, he was knocked out cold.
Really?
I mean, knocked out cold.
Well, he is fighting. he is fighting Amilcar Edgardo Funes Melian. I never heard of, who's 22-9, 17 knockouts. Paul Demir has got 45 wins, 14 knockouts, 13 losses, 6 draws. That's a lot of draws. then we have, what a mismatch. Check this out, a female mismatch of the week in Canada. Edmonton, Alberta tomorrow night. We got Jelena Mirjanovic, who's 24-5 with 12 knockouts. One draw, fighting Lindsay Garbat, who is 5-3. One draw. That's rough. Oh, the worst heavyweight mismatch, too, here. That's for the vacant WIBA Women's International Boxing Association Super Featherweight title, by the way. Six-round heavyweight co-main event, I guess, here is Ty Fields, 43-2, with 39 knockouts, fighting Ken Frank, who's 3-0. Ken Frank. Okay. Ty Fields. I've heard that name before. I think I've seen him fight a couple of times.
I mean, for a great record, I mean, but he's not, he had never really impressed me that much. And the last fight that he really had a note, Monty Barrett knocked him out in about 42 seconds.
All right.
One punch.
How fast could you knock him out, Tony?
Should I reach you down 6'9" and almost 300 pounds?
I'm trying to find another good fight here. Miami, Florida on Friday. We have Aramisel Albert, 22-4 with 10 knockouts, fighting Joaquin Zamora, 18-2 with 12 knockouts. Fighting for the vacant International Boxing Organization Latino middleweight title. Say that 10 times fast. Let's see. Javier Francisco Maciel on Saturday in Argentina. 17-1, 11 knockouts, fighting Gaston Alejandro Vega, who is 11-2 with 3 knockouts for the WBO Latino middleweight title. The Latino title is on the line this weekend. Still on Saturday. South American heavyweight title is on the line in a 12-round fight in Sao Paulo, Brazil. George Arias, 46-11 with 33 knockouts, is fighting Emilio Estevez. No, he's Ezequiel Zarate, who is 10-2 with 1 draw, 5 knockouts. Arias has 33 knockouts. That's a fair fight. Anyway, this is kind of an interesting one in Canada. 10-round lightweight fight between Logan McGuinness, 12-0, 6 knockouts, fighting Adrian Verdugo, 17-2, with 14 knockouts. We got a big fight in Denmark. If you like female fighting, for the WBC female welterweight title and the WBO female welterweight title. Cecilia Brækhus, who's 15-0 with 3 knockouts, is fighting Eva Halasi, who's 6-2 with 6 knockouts. Should be an interesting one. Oh, here we go. One of the guys that was involved in one of my favorite fights at super middleweight. Robert Stieglitz is also fighting on Saturday in Germany. He's 38-2, knocked out twice, has 23 knockouts of his own. He's fighting Enrique Ornelas, who's 30-6, 20 knockouts for the WBO super middleweight title. And we looks like we have another female fight, 10-round super featherweight fight between Ramona Kroon on that card, 16-1 with 5 knockouts, fighting Irma Balajagic Adler. I don't even know how to pronounce that one. Balajagic Adler, 12-0 with 5 knockouts. It's a very good female matchup. They only seem to do those over in, like, Denmark, Germany. Not too many of those in the United States anymore, I don't think. Well, let's see. We got a Masafumi fighting this weekend. Masafumi Okuba, 18-3. Six knockouts. Fighting Edgar Sosa, 40-6 with 24 knockouts for the WBC International Flyweight title. And we have the WBC Silver Featherweight title on the line. Justin Savvy, 24-0, 16 knockouts, fighting Alberto Garza, 22-4. It's in Monterrey, Mexico. Well, the cards are good fights on that card. Stone Saturday. I know we have a big UFC coming up. We're all down there at Mohegan Sun. We have a pretty interesting fight card. Actually, I've been putting up blogs on it. Danny O'Connor is fighting Humberto Tapia. O'Connor's now 13-0 with three knockouts, fighting a guy who's 15-15. Matt Bremillard, still undefeated, 22-0 at featherweight, 13 knockouts, fighting Cotmok Vargas. 15-4, 10 knockouts, 1 draw. The main event is Paul Spadafora, 10-round light welterweight fight against Diego Jesus Ponce. And Spadafora is 44-0 with 1 draw, 18 knockouts. Ponce is 19-5, 3 draws, 3 knockouts.
Yeah,
Spadafora's
still, still undefeated. I remember when he won his first title about a decade ago. Then he had some legal problems, you know, and had to get out of the sport for a while. But I remember they even said in the sparring session, now, I don't know how much now, you know, now that, you know, he's gotten a little bit older and, you know, he's obviously in his fights that, you know, since coming back, he's done relatively well. He was always a quick, you know, good boxer, southpaw. Even having some sparring sessions back about 10 or so years ago, he put a tune-up on Floyd Mayweather.
Really?
Tuned him up. Maybe that could be a precursor against other southpaws. Oh, Rich, I got to bring this up, man. I grabbed my dad cracking up with this the other day. Remember the 20... let's get back to Pacquiao here. Remember the 24-7 show with Margarito and Pacquiao?
Yeah.
Remember they showing sparring sessions for both guys' camps?
Yeah.
They were showing a sparring session with, I apologize, I can't remember the name of the guy, but he's southpaw, and he's like, yeah, he goes, I'm being brought in because I can mimic Manny Pacquiao's style with a lot of the foot movement and the foot jabs and mimicking the style. And he goes, yeah, what would you say?
Good luck. Good luck with that, buddy.
Well, the thing is, I've been brought into the camps of Oscar De La Hoya and Miguel Cotto, and I said, if you got brought into those two camps and see what Pacquiao did to them, you're not coming into my camp. He's now 0-3.
Yeah, right. Some things just don't make sense, you know? Like, why do fat people go to the food pantry, tell me?
Yeah.
More morbidly obese people, not just fat people, but, you know, like they get in line for food. Come on. It's right on you that you've already gotten enough. But anyway, that's my rant of the day. Actually, there's a very big fight in a fight card, actually, on HBO on Saturday. It's really the one of the last big ones of the week here on the list, but they saved it best for last, literally. This is in Atlantic City, New Jersey. We got Sergio Gabriel Martinez, 45-2, 24 knockouts, middleweight. 2 draws, fighting Paul Williams, 39-1, 27 knockouts.
Who's this fight?
For the WBC middleweight.
Spanish Shakur was a year candidate. Now, you got, once again, the prevailing factors here is Williams. I like Williams. He throws a lot of punches, but he just his shoulder seems so low. And Martinez found a lot of success coming over the top with right hooks.
Right.
You know, it was a close fight. A lot of people thought Martinez won it. I'm just looking forward to a good fight. I think these two guys, their styles will produce a good fight.
Well, we also have quite a lot of other good fights. We have a 10-round heavyweight fight between Tony Thompson, 34-2, 22 knockoffs, and Paul Marinaccio, who was 24-5 with 11 knockoffs, 3 draws. And we have a 10-round middleweight fight, Fernando Guerrero, 19-0 with 15 knockouts, is fighting Saul Duran, 37-17 with 30 knockouts, 2 draws. Then we have 3 8-rounders, a featherweight fight between Luis Orlando Del Valle, 10-0 with 8 knockouts, and Noe Lopez Jr. is 6-6 with 4 knockouts. And we got cruiserweight Zolt Erde, 31-0 with 17 knockouts, fighting Samson Onyango, 20-6 with 13 knockouts. Also, lightweight fight, Darley Perez, 17-0 with 14 knockouts, fighting Oscar Cuero, who's 13-3. And, as if that were not enough, they have scheduled Steve Upshur Chambers at welterweight, 22-1 with 6 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Bayan Jargal, who is 15-0 with 10 knockouts. That's like the most well-stacked card I've seen in the United States in a long time.
He's a good young fighter. He's a fighter. He got him in the corner, and it looked like a machine gun going off. He was rattling right hand and left hand beside that guy's head. It was like a little Manny Pacquiao display there. And he probably put the guy down and out, stopped it. But Steve Upshur Chambers is a good young fighter.
Yeah. Well, that about does it for the boxing schedule. And we've had our fill of boxing tonight, I think. I know you've never gotten your fill, but... I know that we've taken up an hour and a half already, almost solely on boxing. So we do have to mention something about MMA eventually. And we do have a... Yeah, we didn't even get to get Al's big-time analysis of the MMA versus boxing debate, really. We didn't get to that point, but... He was still a good interview. We covered a lot. UFC 123 is this weekend in court, so we definitely have to talk about that. It's going to be in Michigan, believe it or not. This Saturday, Auburn Hills, Michigan. UFC 123, the main event is Quentin Rampage Jackson. From the 18, yes, he is, same guy. Fighting Lyoto Machida, the number 2 light heavyweight, number 8 pound for pound, according to Sure Dog. Anyway, that's going to be an interesting fight. I would pick Rampage myself because he doesn't have the distraction of the A-team, and it seemed like that was the only thing that held him back from beating the crap out of Rashad. So even though Machida beat Rashad too, I don't know, it seems to me that I think... Rampage is the more aggressive puncher, mover. And I don't know what Machida's done to improve his game, though, so that's the X factor. I don't know if he can really go by common opponents either. You know? Tough one. Because it did seem like Rampage was just about to knock Rashad out when he lost gas in his last fight. So if that's the only thing holding him back, and he would have ruined him like that. You know, Lyoto Machida ruined Rashad. It's just something about Rampage that just tells me not to bet against him. The next one is much easier to handle. To get BJ Penn versus Matt Hughes, which Matt Hughes is just like kind of obscure now. You don't hear a lot about his fights because they don't last very long. this one, BJ Penn is coming off a fight where he got demolished. He got kicked and punched all over the cage. And he got really smashed up in the face. At one point, I remember he kept touching his tooth. Like he was going, oh, it's going to fall out any minute. And that hurt really bad. He got his lip caught on or something. But he fought a guy named Frankie Edgar, who I got to see live down in New Jersey once. Thanks to Zients. Thank you, Zients. I got to see him, and Frankie has improved so much since that time. So much. He is probably the best boxer in MMA history. He's got the Manny Pacquiao type of bounce to him. You know, of course, he doesn't have quite as much speed, but he knows how to throw punches better than any other MMA fighter, and he just demolished BJ Penn. Now, he isn't that much of a boxer, but he is that much of a fight controller. He uses his BJJ in his wrestling, and he'll control the fight. And BJ is just showing a lot of wear, showing a lot of age. I just don't know whether he's got that high-caliber performance left in him. We'll see. He might pull out a miracle, but Matthews, I just think, has just got the more hardcore experience and late success. I just don't think DJ's going to have a chance against him, but we shall see. Aaron Simpson's also fighting Mark Munoz. Gerald Harris versus Michael Jose Falcao Gonçalves. George Sotiropoulos fighting Joe Luzon. That's an interesting one. Brian Foster versus Matt Brown. Tyson Griffin facing Nick Lentz. Phil Davis versus Tim Boach. Edson Mendez Barboza versus Mike Lolo. And the comeback kid, Carl Parisian versus Dennis Hallman. Paul Kelly is also facing TJ O'Brien to round out the card. But I don't know if you remember us talking about this, but I'm sure I mentioned it at some one point or another that Carl Parisian actually had ducked out of the fight the last I heard anything of him in the UFC. Something had happened, or he had some issue with painkillers, taking painkillers. So he got deep into a situation where he had to go to rehab and everything like that. Well, he's fought at one card since then in July. One over Ben Mortimer by a rear naked choke submission. And now he's coming back to the UFC. So should be interesting. But he's like more of a judo guy. When certain guys come along and their just skills are just so great in one area, they tend to just become famous just for that. I mean, Lyoto Machida made karate and MMA intertwined. Because he's got mostly a karate style. And Parisian is a jiu-jitsu judo guy, mostly judo. And he really brought a lot of people into understanding and consciousness of what judo means to MMA. Like, he could throw people like you wouldn't believe. You know, he'd just be standing toe-to-toe, and the guy would just be all of a sudden on his back. He just knew how to throw people. And he did well with it. His record is 19-5. And I just love the comeback kid type of story, so definitely wish him well. But other than the big UFC 123 this weekend, I'm sure we got cards everywhere. We got IFC Winner Punch in Poland. Strikeforce Challengers 12 also. That's just tomorrow night in Jackson, Mississippi. Desert Rage, Full Contact Fighting 8 in Yuma, Arizona. Shudo, The Way of Shudo, Like a Tiger, Like a Dragon, Tokyo on Friday. Rage in the Cage, 146. The Wild Horse Pass Hotel and Casino in Chandler, Arizona. Battle at the Border, 7 in Hankinson, North Dakota. Pro Kumite, Fairfield Halls, Croydon, England. That's on Saturday. We got Rampage versus Machida, of course, just talked about Saturday in Michigan. Cage 14 All Stars in Finland. Power Fight Extreme 4 in Parana, Brazil. And we got Colosseu Fight Championship in Santa Catarina, Brazil. Orion's Fight Night in Paiai, Brazil. Paiai. Heroes Lithuania in Lithuania. Conquest Fighting Championships in Brazil. These are all Saturday. Gladiator Elite K Cage Fighting 20 in Warsaw, Indiana. Midwest Combat Challenge 12 in Akron, Ohio. Battle of the Arts 2 in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And Sunday, we got Return to the Power Geek Spirit in Tennoji, Osaka, Japan. Demo Fight 5 in Brazil, Sunday. 8th Anniversary in Tokyo, Japan. Caged Fury 13 on Monday in East Liverpool, Ohio. Also Monday, we have Bad Blood going on at the Expo Center in Milwaukee. Thanksgiving Massacre 3 in Mansfield. I don't know why they're having all these fights on Monday. The Big Bang in Atlantic City, also on Monday. Trump Taj Mahal Hotel. That's about it for the MMA stuff. Now, I don't know if you get to see it, Tony, but just to start switching over to other sports, I did get to write some big story about the Eagles recently. Did you catch that on opposingviews.com? Did I send the link?
Eagles?
The Philadelphia Eagles, man.
What did you write about them?
I said they were going to go undefeated for the rest of the year.
Oh, Christ, now they're saying
I said they have a good chance to. I didn't really think they were going to.
You know what? It was weird, Rich, because a couple weeks ago they had that loss to Tennessee, and that was your boy Ellis Hobbs of Super Bowl whatever it was fame. You know, now he's an Eagle, not one of my personal favorites. Getting toasted, I mean toasted, by Kenny Britt. I can't tell you how many times. And it was like, you know, it's not looking good, man, not looking good. I mean, they gave up a 9-point lead, and then they eventually ended up getting creamed in that game. But Vic came back and they broke the ribs. They came back, they beat Indianapolis. It was actually a lot more lopsided than the score proved. I mean, that was kind of a... I mean, they had him beat by, like, they were beaten by, 12 points or something, or they were beaten by more than a touchdown and a field goal. And next thing you know, it's like it's fourth down. Well, they sack Peyton Manning and they force a fumble. They said, wait, he brushed his head with a blow to the head, 15-yard penalty. Manning throws a touchdown on the next play, and now the game's within, not, you know, 12 points, but like 2 points, or 9 points, but it was 2 points now. It's like, oh, shit. But they held on to win. Very impressive. Okay. Then they went out there on Monday night, and they just absolutely romped and stomped over Washington. You know, Vic's playing at a high level now. And granted, I made fun of the guy when he first got signed. I remember we were on the air that night when the signing happened. They were saying, Tony, what's wrong? And you could hear my phone beeping. What the hell's going on? I'm like, I'm getting text messages. He was just signed Michael Vick. What?
Yeah.
He was just signed Michael Vick. Are you serious? I'm like, yeah. But hey, the guy's playing well. A lot of people have been criticizing him, and you know what? I've been tough on him. You know, ever since his conviction 3 years ago, because I'm a dog lover. I'm not a fan of pit bulls. I'll tell you that right now. But I am a dog lover, and you know, some of the things that he and his boys are doing were heinous. But hey, you got to give a guy a chance to, you know, regain his life. I mean, a lot of people, I have a couple good friends of mine that now hate the Eagles because he's playing for them. And, hey, you know, I can respect that.
You know what's funny? You search Michael Vick now, and the images that come up, the entire first page are all him in an Atlanta Falcons uniform. You know, he hasn't pushed himself with the Eagles that much yet. It's like there. It's weird the way the Internet works sometimes. But I guess, you know, because it's been around so long, it's a higher search result. But still, it's kind of weird because... It's not only that, but it's, of course, that and the pictures of him and the dogs, you know, the dogs ripping
his
pants off or something, you know, like sad over this protest.
Everybody's got to have a chance to make a living in life. And I got some friends who are like, yeah, he's got a way to make a living. You got to be bagging groceries. You shouldn't be making millions in the NFL.
Well, this year,
okay,
it's interesting because...
Look at this. Look at, like, hey, a guy like Mike Tyson.
Are set up for him. He's going to have to face the Falcons in the playoffs. If everything keeps going in this direction, that's going to be the game.
You know, the Eagles did play the Falcons last year and this year,
And I don't know how much Vic played in the game last year. He might have played a little bit as a backup. That's when they still had McNabb. And this year when the Eagles beat the Falcons, Kevin Cobb was the quarterback because Vic was hurt with the broken ribs. So, yeah, he didn't play the Falcons this year, which was kind of funny. But getting back to
the playoffs,
they very well might in the playoffs. You're right. But getting back to another topic, people are like, well, he shouldn't be allowed to play in the NFL. Well, look at a guy like Mike Tyson. Now, I don't think Mike Tyson raped Desiree Washington. But the thing is, he was still convicted guilty. And his first fight out of prison after raping a woman made $30 million for a minute and a half of work over Peter McNeely. Come on.
Come on, man.
Okay. I just made a point there. Yeah, the guy's got to make a living. You know, if he's gonna be, you know, a member of society, he's got to have some type of a job. If his job is an NFL player, so be it. You know, we all got to work somehow. People get out of prison, they got to, you know, have a chance to, you know, make a living. You know, they're out on their own. Well, if Joe Smo gets out of prison, you know, for 10 armed robberies and whatever else, and you know, the Detroit Lions want to sign him, that's all fine and good. You know, he's got to make a living somehow. Most likely he'll be bagging groceries. But Michael Vick was lucky enough to get a chance to play for an NFL team again. He's doing a lot with the community now. The guy's doing a lot with the community. You know, he's turned his life around.
He's paid his dues. I'll give you that.
Yeah, he paid his dues. Yeah, I saw this when I went to training camp this year, and I noticed it after a lot of games, too. And I don't know how much of this he did, you know, before, you know, he got incarcerated. Hard, because it was hard for me to tell because he was in Atlanta at the time. But after I went to practice this year up at, you know, Lehigh, Pennsylvania, as soon as the practice was over, and even though he wasn't named the starting quarterback at the time, he was practicing as a backup, he grabbed a bunch of his teammates in midfield. This was just after practice, and they knelt down in prayer. And I was like, you know, that kind of impressed me a little bit. You know, not only is he trying to better his life, you know, mentally, but he's trying to better his life spiritually. And after a couple of the games this year, you know, I could see them, you know, kneeling down with the opposing teammates, holding hands and taking a moment of spiritual reflection. And that's really what sports is all about. You know, you can battle your ass off on the field or battle your ass off in the ring or the octagon or the baseball diamond. But when it's all over, you know, those are your brothers out there, you know. And I remember that specifically after 9/11, some of the baseball games, some of the football games, and the fight card that I went to in Philadelphia when every fighter, including the ones from Tanzania, Mexico, Brazil, wherever they're from, all carried an American flag in the ring. Because when it's over, that's your brother.
Right.
That's how I got on that tangent.
That's why the Aussies went to war with us. They were like some of the biggest help in Afghanistan. The Australian Special Forces. You heard a lot about the British and the Americans in the beginning, but the Australians are nothing to mess with either. They've been around with us since Vietnam. You still with us, Tony?
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Just checking, you know. You had quite a bit of rant there. I wanted to make sure you didn't pass out. But actually, brings me into a nice transition point. We got 10 minutes left in the show, and I want to talk about an issue that's been in the news lately with alcohol. And I want to bring in a special guest from the Dingo and the Baby show.
Hey, let's take a short break and then go back with our very special guest, Dingo and the Baby. Would you like something to drink?
I'll have water, please.
I'll have water, too, but with lemon.
I'll have a Sam Adam.
It's 9:30 in the morning. And don't you have an outstanding DUI?
Yeah, but I gotta get the taste of weed and hooker spit out of my mouth.
I'll have a Sam Adams, too. Samuel Adams. Always a good decision. Okay, we're back with the stars from Family Guy, Brian and Stewie Griffin, a.k.a. Dingo and the Baby. Family Guy will now air 5 nights a week on CW South Florida at 6:30 and 11. Why don't we take another call?
Evan, I have to ask you. What's the deal with all the sexy parties that you're having all the time? I mean, some of those honeys are looking fine. Do you use any kind of relaxatory inhibitant? And Dingo, why haven't you hit that Lois Mamacita? She's smoking.
Yes, well, to answer the first part, I find that a little Bacardi and breast milk goes a long way in pleasing the honeys. On that second part, I have to say, Dingo has as much chance of tapping Lois's natural resources as I do in becoming a spokesperson for male enhancement.
Hey, if someone's looking for more information about the show, where can they go?
They can always visit CWSFL.com, home for non-stop entertainment, and download our Family Guy desktop widget. Then they can...
All right, that's enough, Stewie. That's enough, Stewie. And, all right, so the reason why I play that is also not just to make people laugh, but also to highlight a story that's been in the news lately. I don't know if you heard about this stuff called Four Loko, Tony.
Of course I have.
You heard about it? And now they're talking about banning all alcoholic drinks with caffeine in them. The FDA is taking these steps now. It's like one stupid business fucked it up for the whole class. But they do have a good point, because the shit is 12% alcohol. Malt liquor in a can. Have you seen any news clips about this stuff?
Well, I was listening to a lot of radio today. I haven't seen clips of that, but I was listening to a radio broadcast talking
about it. Is that a big thing in Pennsylvania? They allow it to be sold there?
Well, I don't know if it's a big thing. I've heard one radio station today talking about it. And, you know, I heard about it like a week or two ago. And then one guy on the one station today, like, he had like a half a can over the weekend. And he's like, I had a can of the worst headache of all time. It didn't taste good. It's just like a combination of like grape soda, malt liquor, and like raspberry something.
And it's energy drink.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, the story I heard that kind of put me over the edge was there was a girl who was playing beer pong with it, and she smashed her SUV. It broke her back. You know? Because she thought she could try. She was all amped up and drunk. It's like, oh, that's hard. But the thing is, you know, it's like one of those issues where the government feels like they got to step in and they got to do something about it. And they just way overstep their bounds. The point is the price and the alcohol percentage. It's not the caffeine, really, per se. Because you can have a 6% alcoholic drink in a can with energy drink in it or caffeine and not cause these problems. But once you go to 12% in one can for $2.50, somebody can just go to the store and get drunk for $3, you know, less than $3. I think that's where the problem is. And they didn't focus on that narrow area. They were just like, all right, let's just restrict everybody. Right? They're just going to find another way. That's all there is. People start drinking grain alcohol.
You're right. But Mando, that was some disgusting shit, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I was one night, we were getting ready for a party. I was pre-party before the party started. I was drinking a bottle of Mad Dog in the shower, getting ready for the party to start.
How
hard and cold back then, Rich.
Yeah. I can still remember my first blackout.
I can't.
They actually call this Four Loko, not blackout in a can. No, so obviously I don't remember my first blackout, but I do remember waking up from it. Covered in puke at Norwich. Well, some of the stuff that I brought? Yeah, that was the predecessor to Four Loko. That's what I was drinking. It was called Four Max. And that was the same company. Same company, but they elevated it to a new level by adding 2% to a new cocktail. And before, Max was just grape, and they actually had wormwood in it, which is like part of the appeal of absinthe. But they, you know, somehow they get away with putting it in a malt liquor drink. And yeah, that was the same, very same stuff. Now that I think about it. Same company and everything, but now you'll never be able to get it again. They're going to take the caffeine out of it. You're not going to be able to get stimulated and drunk at the same time so that you can be an ass and you can have energy to do it. But, yeah, I just thought that was kind of an interesting story. Made me want to take a break from my sports writing on opposing views and write about that. because there's like a two-pronged story. You know, it's a warning to kids, like, hey, wake the fuck up. Learn how to handle your alcohol and what to stay away from, what to drink in moderation. Go buy one of those, but appreciate it. Drink it the whole night. Get buzzed off it in the long run, you know? Don't drink five of them playing beer pong and then go try to drive. It's not going to happen well. And then the other part of it is, you know, government, you know, you can handle this without going off the handle. So I don't understand why they would just be like, all right, no caffeine can be mixed with alcohol. Because then that puts the whole Red Bull and vodka in jeopardy too, you know, to some extent. That's the slippery slope you get to. You can't have Red Bull and vodka anymore at bars. What the fuck? People will revolt, you know. That's the number one driver of the Red Bull company, I think, is that drink mixture. So many bars just have to have that shit in stock. It's just not an option. But I don't know, other than that, I think I run out of boxing, MMA, big discussions. That's about all I got for now. Until next week, when I'm not sure who we'll have on for a guest, but it will be somebody famous. Yeah, next week is Thanksgiving. So no guests. That's right. But I do think I do have somebody trying to get worked out for December 2nd who you'll like. So
yeah.
We'll see. We'll keep it a surprise, though. Keep it on the down low.
Yeah.
And if you're in an area where they still sell Four Loko, buy it now because it's about to change. But don't abuse it. That's the message. All right, well, we got to give a special thanks to Al Bernstein, of course. Our Zions guy, go to ZionsSucks.com. There's a big Zions banner there. There's a Zions banner at the top of our blog. Click on that. Buy it from him. It's the old school Zions stuff, you know, mostly, and you get a lot of cool gear and cheap prices. And he supports our site. So he's an old shareholder that burned. He needs your money. You can buy his kids Christmas present. But anyway, we got to help him out as much as you can. And also, of course, drinkcocaine.com. Check him out. Redux Beverages, which are their big sponsor. Prime Athletics. You can already click on them at the top of the blog, too. It's right there. Unavoidable. Anyway, they'll obviously thank Al Bernstein for a great interview. And keep watching him. And we got this also, most of it, I actually realized I started taping it late on the podcast. But we got most of the Al Bernstein interview there. So check that out. It'll be up there by tonight. And thanks for stopping by. Got like a minute.
All right, cool. Till next time.
Yes, yeah. December 2nd.
Tornado's out. Later.
Bye-bye.